Hello and welcome to H-Town Rewind. This is Josh.
And Dave.
And we are history teachers in the Houston area, and this is our podcast about the history of...
At this point, whatever we want.
But the theory is Houston.
Fort Worth?
Fort Worth is nice, but it's not Houston.
Oh, okay. What about Washington on the Brazos?
I'm going to count that, because we can get there in a day and be back.
Galveston?
Yes.
Dallas?
Come on, man. Be serious.
I know. No. It's the Christmas season, and we are trying to be funny. Well, I'm trying to be funny because I'd like to openly mock Dallas. I only can't because I'm told not to.
And happy almost New Year. We're recording this a couple days before.
Yeah, and just after my man's birthday.
Thank you. Now you know my birthday. Should I give my mother's maiden name, too?
No, I already put that on the previous episode.
Okay, good. David, what are we talking about today?
We are going to be talking about San Felipe de Austin.
Okay.
Also known as, for those that don't speak Spanish... San Felipe de Austin is San Felipe of Austin.
Thank you for that clarification.
Anytime.
And what is that place and why is it important?
That place is the birthplace of everything we understand about what Texas is today. Specifically, Austin's colony. If you're not familiar with Austin's colony, well, Moses Austin was an early impresario in the state, 1820. Unfortunately, died of pneumonia. Rest in peace. Gave his impresario-ness-ship, his land grant to his son, Stephen F. Austin.
And an impresario is basically someone who's been hired by the Mexican government, before that, the Spanish government, to colonize some of the outer tiers of Mexico.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Austin gets this land grant, and he brings 298 families, we'll call them the old Austin 300, to Texas, and they're going to settle this area. They're gonna build things. They're gonna make things. They're gonna steamboat things. They're gonna cast iron things.
Oh my!
And the capital of this colony, of this wide swath of land, is San Felipe de Austin, which had how many plots? 200.
In theory, 200. I don't know if they all got filled.
Right. And then there were, as we found out later on, there were much larger plots on the outskirts of town.
Stephen F. Austin had high ambitions for this place.
The man knew... Okay, I'm going to say this right now, and Josh is going to talk about it later on. There were three things you had to do if you wanted to move to Texas, if you wanted to be a Texian settler in Mexico, Coahuila y Tejas. You had to do what?
Speak Spanish.
Okay.
They didn't do that.
Stephen F. Austin did.
Yes, he did.
What else did you have to do?
Become Catholic.
Stephen F. Austin also did this.
No one else did, but he did.
What else did you have to do?
Maybe leave the slaves back in the States.
Well, we're going to call them something a little different. We're going to call them indentured servants. That's not quite slavery, although it is. But yeah, Stephen F. Austin knew how to game the system. He knew how to play the system to win.
And Mexico is in a situation where they can't really be picky. They need this area colonized.
Yeah, they need this area colonized. They need settlers there selling things that they can tax and get revenue. And they need this to be a prosperous endeavor. So, Stephen F. Austin comes into town, sets up his thing.
So, it's a wonderful museum. It's a living history sort of thing. And why are we counting it as Houston? Because it's what? 20 minutes west of downtown?
Man, it's a field trip away from anywhere in Houston.
If it's a day trip from downtown Houston, we count it.
That is the parameter of kind of what we talk about. If it's an overnighter, it cannot be part of Houston history. But let's give some backstory about San Felipe de Austin real quick before we start cutting away. Founded in around 1824.
Yep.
And burned down to the ground in 1836.
By its own people.
By its own people, not Santana.
No.
And I feel the need to call him Santana now. I don't know why. It just gives it more glorious recognition of this failing upwards dictator. It's a town. It's a thriving town. It's a thriving community. They got a river just north of it, the Brazos River. They can steamboat things in and out once or three times a day, maybe.
They're using canoes.
They're using canoes, but they're steamboats.
There's steamboats, but the river, the water levels in the river are so inconsistent, it's not practical.
Nah, yeah. These steamboats that we're going to talk about in a bit will come into play, because anytime we saw a steamboat, we were impressed. Because to get a steamboat on that part of the Brazos River, man, that takes dedication, that takes grit.
It does.
True Grit.
So the place now is a museum. It's half museum inside. Wonderful museum.
Great museum. One of the most impressive museums. And if you ever get a chance or an opportunity, you just have an afternoon, go check this museum out. The interactive levels of this place is off the charts. You are in 1834, 1835, 1825, 1826, 1836. You're right there. You see the picture, you read the story of the tarring and the featherings. The tarring and the featherings, which happened, but only when when the judge was out of town.
So we went with David's friend Eric, who recorded most of this.
Yeah.
So shout out to Eric.
A lot. So if you see any historical stuff on any of our Instagram, thank you, Eric. You are a tremendous friend, compatriot, and scholar.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
And thank you for the kolaches, by the way.
Yeah, oh, man. Cream cheese and sausage.
So when we get there, there's an outside section, which is replicas of different buildings. And then there's a museum. We started with the outside.
Actually, there's an outer area. Like, if you just, like we did, like three bellends, just walked in and, like, see this pathway. Okay, what's this pathway? This pathway shows you what all of this area was. And it's just wilderness and forest and overgrown at this point. But you can see, nope, this is where the haberdashery was. This is where the apothecary was. This guy finagled his way into a shop.
This is where Travis's law office was.
This is where the printing press was.
Yeah.
Sorry to yell.
No problem. So we started out in the printing press, the replica.
Mm-hmm.
And shall we cut to that section?
Yeah. Okay, so just give you a heads up. Eric and I went to Goliad and recorded some things. And I'm going to reference Goliad a few times, so I do apologize for that. And I'm just forewarn you, if you don't like cast iron, there might be something wrong with you. And if you don't like cast iron after this episode, there is something wrong with you.
I might go off on a tangent about how great cast iron is.
The man loves cast iron.
Yes,
so
I do.
We're going to start in the courthouse and convention hall. Then we're going to go to the immigrant house. Then the kitchen / slave quarters.
Yep.
Then the kiln, which if it's got a kiln, I'm going to go to it. And we're going to talk about it because kilns are glorious. Then we go to the hotel cellar.
Yep.
Then the museum itself. Then we can go through and talk about some of the interactive exhibits because I cannot sell this place enough. And I have no problem selling this place for free because this museum is awesome. Its staff were awesome. They were friendly. They were courteous, knowledgeable, helpful. I mean,
and they remember me from when I took the kids on a field trip.
They remembered Josh from when he was there before. And they've got a new thing, but Josh is going to talk about that at the end.
Oh yes, thank you.
And the Pfeiffer cabin,
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, the Pfeiffer cabin.
It's not hers.
Was the last standing and only standing thing from 1836.
So shall we cut to the courthouse, David?
Let's go to the courthouse.
All right, here's the courthouse.
So here we have, what is this, Josh?
This would have been the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
It would also serve as kind of city hall,
uh-huh,
as the convention hall.
And this is easily the nicest building that we've been in so far.
Keep in mind, there wasn't a judge on site all the time. He would come into town on a periodic, a circuit court judge.
Wouldn't Stephen F. Austin be the ultimate authority?
He is, but he can't be everywhere at once.
So he's going to have alcaldes, he's going to have ayuntamientos.
Kind of like a mayor.
Yeah. Alcalde was the mayor. Ayuntamiento was the city council. But that's going to be the Spanish side. That's going to be the Mexican side. Not Spanish side, excuse me. It's going to be the Mexican side. This is going to be the Texian side, right?
Basically.
Am I off?
And this is just to settle mostly minor disputes.
Like property disputes,
yeah.
Theft, larceny.
Yeah. Not major crimes. So things could wait until the circuit judge came in.
I don't see a large tree anywhere for them to deal with major crimes at. And why is that, Josh? Because it probably would have gotten burned down along with everything else in 1836. There's two tie-ins I'd like to mention. So this is the House of Law, and I see a Masonic manual, which is on point. Manual Parliamentary Practice. Where did these books come from? Where would their law books come from?
Well, they do have a printing press on site. And actually, the first book printed in Texas was a translation of Spanish law written by Stephen F. Austin himself.
Why is that, Josh?
because none of them were willing to learn Spanish.
Or one of the three things that they were supposed to do when they came to Texas and take land here.
Become Catholic.
And?
Leave your slaves back home.
And?
Learn Spanish.
Ah, okay. I'm all about the jingoism. I'm all about the Texas pride. But if we're going to be honest, and we have to be honest, if we're going to take history seriously, we have to be honest. There's three things you guys got to do. Are you going to do any of them? No, we're not going to do any of them. All right, well, we have a problem with that. You agree to do all of them. Well, do something about it. All right, we'll
now, send in Stephen F. Austin, personally, he did all three things, and he learned Spanish. That's why he's the one who did the translation.
Well, he kind of had to. His name's on the thing.
He kind of has to. But no, he considered himself a Mexican citizen, and he took it very seriously until...
He didn't.
Well, until he didn't. Until they put him in jail.
Just for trying to mention rebellion. Can you believe that? Put him in jail for a year just for talking about rebelling. And it wasn't even like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. It was this, hey, Mexican official. Yes, Mr. Austin, they are thinking about it. Not me. They are thinking about it. Well, you know about it. You must be a conspirator. Come on, let's go to jail for a year. Let's keep moving.
But Mexico City is nice. Just not the jail.
I think that can be said for everything, except for federal prisons. I hear they're nice. Courthouse and Convention Hall. Texian leaders met in San Felipe de Austin to advocate for improved governance that they felt would help Texas thrive. Conventions in 1832, 1833, and 35 were brought we, the people of Texas, here. So the cool thing is, not only is this in the middle of nowhere, but now we have a functioning infrastructure and we have a functioning legal system, literally out in the middle of nowhere where there is no CVS.
So yeah, your only access to the outside world is the Brazos River, which is just north of us.
Yeah.
And they would basically use glorified canoes to move all their materials down to the Gulf of Mexico to get it out to the bigger world, usually New Orleans.
And where did goods come in from? We saw a register or a manifest on a ship earlier from New York to New Orleans, clearly on the water. When you get to New Orleans, everything's overland until they get here. They get here, they sell things to all the farmers. It amazes me that this area lasted as long as it did. It doesn't make any sense to me logistically. But I'm in the 20th century. I'm born in the 20th century, it's the 21st century now. Things were different there. There wasn't anything here. So if you're going to put the time in and build it, you're building the community. And then everyone is working as part of this community. The legal center here is a great example of that. It still blows my mind that they willingly burned this place down so Santa Ana couldn't. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's either the kitchen or the slave quarters.
Well, let's investigate. Either the kitchen or the slave quarters?
Yeah, or both. That's the slave quarters.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of these buildings are multi-purpose, which I guess everything out here, if it was out here at this time period, would be multi-purpose.
You got to. Everyone wears many hats. The mayor
and
is also...
And they actually do wear small hats.
Beautiful hats. Wonderful hats. The best hats.
Round hats. All right, so immigrants dwelling.
That's right.
Families moving to Austin's colony might live temporarily in San Felipe de Austin in small cabins that dotted the townscape. While living there, they often explored the countryside. So I guess this would be the first stopping spot. I guess, if you can't afford the hotel, you're coming in here?
Well, this is if you brought your family already.
Okay.
And you need short-term housing.
Okay.
The hotel is just for the men who came in advance of their families.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would there be more of these? I assume that there'd be more.
There would be more. Now, remember, these are all replicas, very accurate replicas.
Because everything was burned down in 1836.
But yes, this would be a good representation of what a family who needs short-term housing would have.
And this would just be for a night or two?
Night or two, maybe a week. Just
maybe
until
week,
your place
is
ready.
Yeah. All right.
Don't get settled in.
There's not enough room for
and
you
clean
to.
It up, otherwise you won't get your lease back.
Celia's kitchen and bake oven.
Yes, now I remember.
All right.
So yes, Celia would be an enslaved person, and obviously any large kitchen is going to be separated from the housing because of the heat and the danger of fires. And Celia would live in here.
Okay. I don't know if I can I talk about another YouTube show, Townsend's?
Love Townsend's.
This is like walking into a Townsend's show right now. They do a lot of cooking on Townsend's. It's all colonial, so it's colonial American history. So it would have been 1770s, 1780s, 1790s, up to 1800. This would have been like 25 years later. But what I always thought was cool was just like at home now on your range, where you have this thing cooking here, and this thing cooking here, and this thing cooking here, and you can do all the different times and set your timers and whatnot. It's the same principle with our hooks. So one pot would be farther away from the fire, closer to the fire, and then they would turn, and then you could move them and adjust them based on how hot you needed them and how fast you needed to. If it was a stew that you're making overnight, for example, or if it's something that you're making that day, I always thought that was just so clever. Just a clever way of manipulating the heat.
And you'll notice it's all cast iron.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a nerd about cast iron. That's what I prefer to cook with. If you take care, good care of it, it will last forever. And Celia probably had to take care of that, too.
I'm assuming Celia took care of everything in here.
Yeah.
Because this place looks like it was nonstop motion and activity from sunup to sundown.
Yeah, you're making 3 meals a day, probably.
Yeah, if not just for you, for everybody.
Yeah.
Who do you think she would have fed here, out of here?
Probably the hotel
guests
and anyone in the immigrant quarters.
Yeah.
And, of course, her owner.
And the bed here for her.
And you can't imagine how hot it would be with this oven going.
Oh, Lord. That's why you've got the 2 doors open at all times.
Yeah.
There's 3 doors and a window in this one building. That's just to keep ventilating, I guess, because it's going to get... Think of this in the summertime.
No, I mean, it's kind of warm right now in December. Summertime would be unbearable.
Oh, this is nice. We've got a little courtyard for picnicking. And a water urn.
So yeah, that would collect the water. It hasn't rained in a few days.
And our kiln.
And do you want to explain what a kiln is?
I did so well in Goliad. Okay. So this is the thing that's going to make the air go, that's going to make the fire go hot, 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 or no, low, low, low. But this is a much more better designed kiln than we saw in Goliad, if you remember. If you can actually look in, you can see how deep this thing is. But yeah, you have your fire there. You have your pump here that's going to regulate your airflow. Your chimney stack is there. And this part would have been open, though. That's the only difference, is this part's covered. This part would be open normally, because this is where you're going to stoke the fire. But clearly we're not stoking fires. We don't need this. But yeah, that's a nice evolution of the kiln. This is kiln 1820s, 1830s, Goliad 1820s, 1830s. But this looks so much more professional. You've got your water bucket here, and you've got your kindling bucket there. You've got extra kindling there.
So, David, there's technically a third floor to the hotel that I'd like to show you.
Oh, yeah.
This part wasn't open to guests. This would be the cellar.
With our ADA ramp.
Remember, there's no refrigeration.
Well, there is, just not in this time period.
Not what we would call refrigeration.
I wonder what
this is. So this is the hotel cellar. I want you to notice how cool it gets when you come in here. It's at least...
Oh, wow.
It's 10 degrees cooler.
15, 20 degrees, easy.
So this is where you keep things that would not react well to high heats. So maybe beer and wine, of course, but anything you just didn't want to get over humidified, like if dry goods.
Okay.
Anything that shouldn't get too hot.
You keep your, this is the gourd cabinet, if there's not enough light to make it out. But I mean, what kind of establishment would this be if you don't have a cabinet dedicated just for gourds?
Yeah.
And good job, guys.
You're going to be eating a lot of squash.
And gourds. Of squash. Then also just a storage area. But no, mainly at the time it wouldn't be storage. It would be things that you need to preserve, things that need to be kept cold or cool.
Or dry.
And I'm going to go with what? Whiskey?
I think they're probably drinking maybe some whiskey. I mean, they do have cornfields, so it's going to be bourbon.
Bourbon.
Yeah.
Okay.
They got more corn than wheat at this point. They might have some sugar, so it might be some rum, but that's probably a treat because you're not along the triangular trade where you can get the sugar.
Fair.
And beer is not going to happen because, again, not a lot of wheat. Not yet, anyway. So, yeah, you're drinking a lot of whiskey.
Okay, so, Josh, tell us where we're at.
All right, this is the Farmer's Hotel. There's a sign right out front. This is where people just got into town, would stay very short term until their property was ready to be moved into.
Okay.
So there are 2 floors. There's the common area in here. And then the actual room, and I say room singular, would be upstairs where the men would sleep until they could go to their property.
Just one room. You're just going to sleep here for a night or two. There's amenities out in town, so you're not going to be spending any time here.
No.
But if you did want to spend time here, let's go into the common area.
Please. So this is where people would socialize and have their meals.
And play checkers.
Play checkers.
And read their pamphlets. This is a pamphlet. This is an example of a pamphlet that was actually made here on site at the printing press.
Yes, we were just at the printing press, and that is basically the only way to communicate with the outside world at
and
the time.
We didn't want to communicate that we were in the printing room at the time because we're dumb.
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. And back here we have, I'm guessing this is going to be the registration or the check-in room. It's enclosed. It's got a window that can open out. It's got another window that can open out and a bed with a, I'm not even kidding, guys. I don't want to grab it, but it's right there. It's the bed string tightener. Hey, we finally found one. In Goliad, we have the bed in Goliad, but we didn't have a bed tightener. Here we have a bed tightener.
Which means the bed is useless without the tightener.
Why even have the bed? Why don't you sleep outside?
Well, on some days you might want to. You'll notice it's December and it's still pretty warm.
I also noticed the lack of air conditioning units.
There's not even a dog trot.
I think I found the air conditioning unit. It's the open door.
Basically, as you can see, the doors are not quite shotgun, but yeah, that's how you get a breeze going. Especially when you have the fire going or when you're having your meals.
This is the, as Josh was mentioning earlier, the sleeping loft. It's one room divided in half with a bed and a chair. More of an apartment. I agree with that assessment.
And you would only stay there a couple days. You are very eager to get to your property.
Yeah, because you're in a room with 12 other dudes, and you don't have a shower, and neither do they.
And yeah.
And there's no washing machine.
And everyone's wearing wool clothes.
Everyone's wearing wool clothes in July.
I guess you get nose blind to it after a while. Oh, and indoor smoking.
And indoor smoking. Yes. And indoor spitting.
Yes.
And, yeah. We have another little sleeping. This has got to be for staff. So I'm assuming whoever's going to run the kitchen, this is their room.
Yeah, and the clerk. Yeah. It's going to be a very small staff.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's a hotel, so someone needs to be here 24/7 in case something comes up.
And we can see the bed strings, and we know they are tight.
All right. So, David, you were really struck by how well done the interactive aspects of the museum were.
Let me set this up a little differently, not to disagree in any way. They have a venue for events, wedding receptions, 50-year World War II anniversaries, whatever have you. And what they don't tell you about is this awesome 3D map of the entire area. You can see everything, where the Brazos is, where Sweet Creek is, where all the plots are in conjunction to the river, in conjunction to the relative space to the Commerce Center, the Commerce Square.
And Spanish Town.
Oh, Spanish Town.
Set aside from the rest of the area.
Oddly enough, just kind of maybe somewhat segregated, one could say.
Maybe.
Away from the main settlement of San Felipe de Austin, which is Mexican.
But I am taken by how much planning Stephen F. Austin put into this place. Their street names, it's platted. It's a grid system.
Yeah. It's a grid system. It's a Masonic grid system, one could say, based on what you see in Washington, D.C. Pardon me. But yeah, that just blew me away. And then, okay, so there's this giant table with a 3D map of everything. And here's me. I look down and I go, wait a second. I'm standing on the spot that's right there on the map, because underneath it is a giant, almost better to scale image of all of these plots that Stephen F. Austin designed and I want to say pilfered. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know, but let's cut to the footage or the video.
Yeah, let's see the video. Or listen to it.
Listen to it, yeah. That's because this is an audio podcast, folks.
We have faces for radio, guys, for a reason.
Steamboat traffic reached San Felipe de Austin relatively late in the Mexican-Texas era to navigate the far north of the river. Often the captain had to wait for three separate rises. It required three more to travel back to the Gulf. This related to rainfall that pushed water downstream.
Huh. It wasn't navigable enough for most steamboats. No,
it wasn't deep enough.
So they're like bottoming out two and three times a day.
And a steamboat has a small draft. That's the whole point of a steamboat.
Or the ferry.
So yeah, you're basically using glorified canoes to move things most of the time. So yeah, you're mainly moving things by mule, even though you're right next to the river, because that river is barely navigable. If you want to get to New Orleans, you're moving things by mule.
Yeah, let's look up some volunteer justice.
Now, there is a courthouse, but that does not have a full-time judge.
Angelina Payton tried to stop one of her guests, Louis Dayton, from being tarred and feathered in 1827. He was accused of plotting to burn the land office of protest of land fees. They put on the tar and shook a pillow over him.
And, you know, it sounds funny, but that's torture. I mean,
that's torture.
That tar has to be so hot.
That is definitely a human rights violation.
Yeah.
Geneva's going to be calling. Oh, Austin County Land Office. And I'm guessing, was this Whiteside Hotel? Expansion of Austin's home was leased to the Whitesides in 1828. Principal sleeping apartment was a low loft running the entire length of the building, reached by a ladder thrust through a hole in the floor. Kind of like the hotel we saw.
Mm. So that at this point, they're big enough to have two hotels.
Yeah. And a billiard hall.
Ooh. I like pool.
And armed citizenry. Boys used to come to my shop to get up shooting matches. Every fellow putting up a dollar, the one who came nearest to the center taking the pot. When it came to me, I shot and won. These are the people that are going to be fighting against the Mexican army. They're tar and feathering and shooting just for fun.
So that was our trip to San Felipe de Austin. If you are ever in Sealy, which is right outside west of Houston, cannot recommend it enough.
It's literally right there. If you're listening to this in Katy, there's no reason you haven't been there. You're like that guy on Long Island that hasn't seen the Statue of Liberty. Don't be that guy.
No, do not be that guy. Go to the Buc-ee's, get a brisket sandwich, and go.
Right. And also, we're both teachers. We're both social studies teachers. What incentive, like, why would a school want to bring their kids to this museum?
It's so interactive. The reenactors come out for the field trips, big groups, and they just break down what day-to-day life is really like at the time.
Right.
And that was what it seemed like you really took away from it. Like, it's a museum about the minutia, not in a bad way.
No, if you are into Texas history, I mean, if you're really into Texas history, you want to understand the thinking behind everything that is around us today. This is your play. If you want to see the surveyor picks that they used to actually plot out the lands, they've got them there. If you want to see the chamber pots, they've got them there. If you want to see the broken chamber pots, they've got them there. They've also got an archaeological dig.
Yeah, they were telling us it will open in the spring of 2026. There will be, because it is an active archaeological site. We probably didn't point that out.
We are right now.
They are going to have a dedicated section just about the discoveries they are making.
Daily. History never stops.
I love learning about, like, how they had to make ink. Because you can't just get ink.
How'd they make ink?
They took abandoned mosquito's net. I said it again. They took abandoned hornet's nests and processed that into ink. They didn't have coffee, so they had to find plants around that had caffeine in it and make their own coffee out of that.
Sweet potato coffee is not a bad coffee.
Whatever they had. And the resilience and...
The resilience.
Pardon me. And the resilience, because I coughed.
The resilience. The grit. You don't have a CVS. There's nowhere to get your stuff. You're just there. Figure it out.
The Brazos is so inconsistent, you don't know when the next shipment's coming in or going out.
From New Orleans, literally, when goods came in, if we didn't mention this, goods came in, they came in from New York to New Orleans, they went over land until they found water, and then shipped it on the water.
When they could. The Brazos is not a very navigable river.
And one has to ask themselves, honestly, dude, why did you pick this spot? Like, there's a river there, yes, and you've got to do something quick, yes, but why this spot when you've got... Just 30 miles away.
Less than.
Allen's Landing.
On the Buffalo Bayou.
Which is weird if you think about it. Allen's Landing was founded in the summer 1836.
By the Allen brothers.
Right. San Felipe de Austin burned in March 1836.
As did Harrisburg.
As did Harrisburg. So where's Sam Houston going to go? Going to go to Harrisburg? Going to go to Nacogdoches?
That's an episode about New Kentucky that we are teasing right now.
Sorry. Not sorry.
Anyway. But just in context, San Felipe de Austin, this is the beginning of what we know as Texas.
Yeah.
There is no Texas without this place. Yes, they burned it down during the runaway scrape.
They burned it down before Santana could.
And David, you make some judgments about that.
I do.
But I get it. I get it to some degree.
Man, there's a lot of vanity. There's a lot of vanity in there. I mean,
revolutions aren't started by humble people.
Well played, sir.
Thank you. On that note, David, this has been H-Town Rewind.
That's Josh.
I'm David. No, you're David.
Yeah, I'm David. You're Josh.
What? You can follow us all the places you listen to podcasts. Share with a friend. Give us a like. Give us a review.
Listen, if you don't even care for us very much, that's fine. But at least give us a listen to find out you don't like us.
Yeah, that's all we ask. And if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, email them to htownrewind@gmail.com. That's all one word. And we look forward to hearing from you. Oh, you better walk right, and you better not squabble, and you better not fight. Best Bronco will arrest you. Pin and boom will take it down. You can bet your bottom dollar that your sugar land bound. Let the kid nice pick.